Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. November's election was a disaster for Republicans in Mecklenburg County. They were wiped off the dais at the county commission, where even some longtime office holders were voted out. Mecklenburg County is left now with only one Republican representative in the state legislature. That leaves only two Republicans in office here, both on city council. One of those Republicans, Tariq Bakari, has said that the GOP has a lot of work to do if it's going to remain relevant in local politics, and he is in our Spirit Square studio to help start that conversation about the future of the Republican Party here. Welcome back.
Hi, Mike. It's great to be here.
And he's put on his NPR voice to join us. Bakari is a first-time city councilman, so watch yourself. But we're also joined by two veterans of Republican politics here. Matthew Ridenour lost his 5th District seat on county commission last month. He is here along with Edwin Peacock, former Charlotte City Council member who ran as the GOP candidate for mayor in 2011 and 2013. Welcome to you both. Good to see you, Matthew.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Edwin, welcome back.
Thank you.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks, or you can watch us on Facebook Live. The best looking person in the room is back is to the camera. That'd be you. There you go. So first, let me get your reaction to what happened in November in the local GOP situation. And Matthew, you were probably the one on this panel most affected by this clean sweep by Democrats of the county commission. What is your theory as to why that happened?
There were a lot of factors at play, and I think that it was a perfect storm of folks who I know came out and said they told me during early voting that they voted straight D to send a message to President Trump. I know there were people who showed up to break the supermajority at the General Assembly. There was the women's movement where the Democrats, you know, they put up a woman in every one of the races for county commission. So there was the women's movement and trying to get women out to vote and support other women. The governors break the supermajority, the 9th district race. So I think there are a lot of factors at play that I think each district, 1, 5, and 6, had a little different it affected each of those races a little differently, but I think those were some kind of prevailing winds this year.
But you're not the legislature, you're not the president, you're not the Congress, you're the county commission. Why take it out on you? Why would people take it out on you guys?
This is party over person. I mean, his race was exclusively about sending a message upstream, and that was exactly what happened to him. There was no target on this man's back. He hadn't done anything. In fact, he gets endorsed by the Observer. He's had a very, very solid career as a very effective conservative in of course a Democratic majority. So he's been praised for the type of service that he's had. So I think that's the part that's so telling about what occurred here. And of course the GOP's got to respond to it.
So Edwin, you were in city council and also lost your seat during a Democratic sweep
yes.
of city council at
yeah,
the time.
It felt a lot like that.
When was that? What year was that?
That was 2011.
What does this tell you as a Republican, as a member of the Republican Party? What does this tell you if you have this perfect storm that Matthew described of the women's movement and Donald Trump and legislative overreach by Republicans? What does it tell you?
I think it just tells you that obviously democracy works and that we have a reactive body that can swing in 2 years very, very drastically. And that doesn't mean that when you see a situation like what occurred to Matthew and other Republicans on this ticket, that we couldn't see it swing back the other direction. If you look at District 5, the races that he lost, and you look at those precincts, and you look at the history over the last 20 years, this could very easily switch back in 2 years. Now, Donald Trump is going to be on the ticket in 2 years, and so we could see a repeat of that. The question will be in 2024 and so on. You're going to see a response from it. So you need good candidates to get back on the ticket, and you need to get back on the horse.
What does it tell you, Tariq?
I want to believe what Edwin just said. I mean, everything in my body wants to believe that. But when I look at the data and you know, 10, 15 years of data here, this to me is the story of urban versus rural and where we're going. And when you look back in 2011, when Edwin ran at that time, I think we were saying the same things back then, which is, all right, so our last Republican at large You know, he took a bad beat, but there's some other dynamics at play. And now, fast forward the clock to today, literally no legitimate Republican candidate would even consider running at large in this county or city because the numbers have just gotten progressively worse and worse and worse. And when you look at the data, especially from this last midterm election, in our kind of the South part of our gerrymandered world where we used to exist, the bluing of the corners in those precincts has just progressively grown and grown and grown to the point where I'm afraid right now, this is just top 20 cities, this is not rural America, that we're going the way of Atlanta, where literally there hasn't been elected Republican official there in over 20 years.
So let me go back to, because this is not just a Charlotte situation where you have the urban areas of the country turning bluer and bluer and bluer and the rural areas of the country staying red and perhaps becoming redder, and then the exurbs just outside the suburbs are kind of purple. What does that tell you? Let me go back to that question. What if the majority of the population is moving one way and Republicans are either moving the other way or staying put, what does that tell you?
Well, I think there are two conversations to be had, and I don't think that either Edwin or Tarek are wrong. I think you can actually hold both positions. I think short term, I agree 100%. District 5 seat can be won in 2020 again. District 6, same. District 1, probably so. Some of those state House, state Senate seats as well. So I think locally, this year was an anomaly for all those perfect storm conditions that I described. Long term, though, I also think Tarek's right on the money. Long term, districts, I've crunched numbers for every election for the last 10 years or so in Charlotte. And on the if you graph it out, District 5, District 6 will go blue on the little line graph in about 7 to 10 years. Should not have happened this soon, but it happened this soon because of the perfect storm.
But you're missing my question. Okay. I mean, if that's happening, if they're turning blue gradually over time because of demographic swings, you're not reaching people. You're not reaching young people. You're not reaching women. You're not reaching gay people. You're not reaching all the people that are now voting Democrat who weren't voting at all before because they were too young or they were independents, whatever. They're independents that swing to the left as opposed to the right. What does that tell you, and what do you have to do about it?
Yeah.
If you're going to survive as a party.
So I think
it's because it's not just local.
If we're being honest with ourselves, I think the point is we are not reaching, especially among all categories, younger people. And the data point that was most, you know, stark to me and that I looked at was looking at the under 45 demographic and how they voted, particularly how many of them are turning out and how and what the margin is that they've been voting Democrat. And when you look at this data, in 2014 they were 26% of the electorate. In 16 they were 36%. In 18 they were 29. And again, that's because of the off year on year. But I think the point here is in 14 they went plus 17% Democrat. In 2018, they went plus 71% Democrat. And the point here is, where do they get their news? They get their news from Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. They get their news from Saturday Night Live and the newscast and the Daily Show with Trevor Noah. Stephen Colbert.
Charlotte Talks.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins, right? At what point in time are they hearing literally even 50-50 of a fair kind of perspective and storyline on what our principles are and what we stand for versus people and messages of intolerance? Not that we're about intolerance, but like the one or two things seem to be the news. How could this, what would you expect different in the trending of these demographics? And again, this is in top 20 cities. I'm not recommending a blueprint for rural America.
Yeah, Republican Party. Tarek, you're casting never as this will never is not forever. I mean, you've got to get back to what Governor Jim Martin called constructive conservatism.
Yes.
We have to reach a demographic where the fastest growing party in this region is unaffiliated. So in the middle and the center is so much at play. Ultimately, when we boil down to the question of what's the difference between a Democrat and a Republican, particularly on local issues, as we're trying to bring people to us, then we don't have to liberalize our message. What we have to do is we have to modernize who we are and how we can address the issues that face every major U.S. city.
If the Republican Party does anything well, the one thing that they do extremely well is messaging. They are lockstep, baby, from the top down. The message gets out, and it's repeated three or four times, so you get your three frequency. It is always there. If you're telling me that the message that's being received is different from the message that's being sent, are you sure?
Well, so I think Edwin nails it with that, and I think this is the problem with writing an op-ed that has to be under 600 words, right? You can't really fully elaborate. I think the point that he's making that's so spot on is we don't need to change our principles. And I've taken a little page from Senator Jesse Helms, who people love or hate for many valid reasons. But the one thing he said that really sticks with me is there's a difference between principles and preferences. Principles are those things you never bend on. You are willing to go down in flames to protect them and to promote them. Those are things like limited government, lower taxes, freedom, family, elements that are core to our message. But then preferences are things we get to decide. We get to be flexible on. Those preferences are where we are losing our messaging in top 20-sized cities because they care about affordable housing and environment.
We'll talk a lot about that because you wrote about that in that op-ed piece, and we'll talk a lot about that as we go along with Tariq Bakari, Charlotte City Council Republican, Matthew Ridenhour, former member of the County Commission, a Republican, Edwin Peacock, former City Council and two-time mayoral candidate in 2013 and 15. I misspoke a moment ago. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the future of the Republican Party, particularly here in Mecklenburg County in Charlotte, given the clean sweep of the county commission and the fact that there are now pretty much two elected Republicans holding office in this part of the world. Tariq Bakari, one of them. He's with us this morning, a member of City Council, along with Ed Driggs, who was on this program last week. Matthew Ridenhour is here, just got voted out of office in county commission, and Edwin Peacock, former city councilman and two-time mayoral candidate, also a Republican. This is a very conservative part of the country, and yet Republicans have lost power here. How do you explain that? Is it just the perfect storm? Is that all it is?
Registration's a little over 50% towards the Democratic Party. You've got 29% of unaffiliateds, and you've got about 22% Republicans.
Look at that, last, though. 22% Republicans in a conservative part of the country.
But we've always been in the minority, Mike. This has been a city where it's been majority Democratic the entire time. And also remember that history is an excellent teacher here for where we are in our party. In 1966, there was an earthquake in the Republican Party, taking a five-member Democratic county commission, and four Republicans were elected. Four Republicans were elected. This was a one-party town, and it was Dr. Jim Martin and four other conscious individuals who said, we're going to run as a group. We're going to pull together an accountant. We're going to get an attorney. We're going to get a business guy, and we're going to get this chemistry professor from Davidson. And we put together a winning combination based off constructive conservatism. And I think that's really where we've got to get back to, is be a problem-solving party on the local level, not bringing in the trench warfare that we're seeing, obviously, from Washington, because that's just generally what we're not finding on the local level. And when these two gentlemen, when I met these guys in 2009, Mike, when we ran, that was not what you were running on in 2009, guys. I remember when you were running for your first time at large. It really wasn't about a national situation. You guys were empowered to lead locally. And I think that's where we're missing a lot of key ingredients in our party, is solid people stepping up.
Well, when you also talk about this being a blip, you're right, because before the election, before the presidential election, everybody, all the national pundits were talking about, well, Donald Trump's the candidate, Hillary Clinton's going to win, it's going to be the demise of the Republican Party, and look what's happened. It's not the demise of the Republican Party. It's a change, a sea change in Republican politics, one, but it didn't happen. It's not happening now, you're saying. It's just a momentary...
I'm not saying it's part
of the cycle.
Well, I'm just saying that failure is an excellent teacher for this party right now. And obviously, in order to get back into a position where we can have a seat at the table, we're going to have to put together solid candidates, a solid message, and we're going to have to get back to grassroots elements of going places where people don't 100% agree with us. Tariq, you know as well, too, that Republicans in this town are very comfortable being in the wedge, where they need to spend more time as in West Charlotte and in East Charlotte, and to hear the urban issues that are challenging the citizens that are moving here and why they're moving here. This is a prospering city. We've got to attack the urban issues, but attack it from a conservative perspective.
Matthew, you lost your seat along with Bill James and Jim Puckett. They've been on county commission for for a long time, and Jim Puckett's been in politics here for a long time, and Bill James was kind of a lightning rod for years. Whenever he opened his mouth or did a tweet or did a Facebook post, people reacted to it, and sometimes negatively. You've been not like that at all, and in fact were known for reaching across the aisle and providing constructive ideas to county commission and working with Democrats on county commission to get things done, and yet you lost your seat. Mm-hmm. How does that impact you?
Well, I would say that
you couldn't have done anything else, could you?
I don't know that I could have. I lost by the slimmest margin of any of the Republicans that lost county commission seats this year, and I think that kind of reflects how I'm viewed in the public, but it wasn't enough. I don't think there's anything I could have done differently. I think we had a good strategy, and it is what it is. But I think that there are some points made about the seat at the table and messaging that I think are spot on, and it isn't just something we look here locally in Charlotte, but it is what can Republicans in more urban areas across the country do differently. And Republicans, if you ask a Republican what the top three or four issues are to them, they're going to tell you, not everyone, I'm sure some Republicans who are listening right now are going to say, like, that's not me at all, but by and large, they're going to say Second Amendment, abortion, they're going to talk about support for Israel, national defense, support the military. Those are some things you'll hear time and again Republicans talk about as issues that are important to them. You ask a Democrat in Charlotte what are the top issues to them, you'll probably hear a couple of national level issues, but you're also going to hear about affordable housing, food deserts, homelessness, upward mobility. You're going to hear a lot about the local issues, and we as a party don't talk about local issues.
Can the issues you just brought up, affordable housing, et cetera, mm-hmm. can they be folded into what was it George H.W. Bush called compassionate conservatism?
Absolutely. If you look
W.
It was W.
That was W. You called it compassionate conservatism.
Right. If you look at affordable housing as an example, we don't have to compromise our principles as a Republican and say, well, I think we should need to give out free housing to everyone. That would be compromising our principles. What we can say is, okay, how can we bring more Fortune 100 companies to Mecklenburg County? Because if someone's making $60,000 and they go get an average salary job at Honeywell making $80,000, suddenly housing affordability got a lot easier for that individual. So how can we bring more better-paying jobs and growing more jobs in Mecklenburg County, for one thing? For two, how can we reduce the time it's taking for a builder to be able to build an apartment complex in Mecklenburg County?
Well, please don't reduce that time.
Well, but the cost of doing business in Mecklenburg County is really hard. It's really high. And I had a builder about a year and a half ago tell me this is the last apartment I'll ever build in Mecklenburg County because I've been delayed over 6 weeks. Well, he's not going to eat the cost of that 6 weeks of delays. He's going to pass that down in the form of higher rents.
But remember, that message right there is simply business friendly.
Right.
We need a business-friendly environment, and what you're going to see is you're going to continue to see from Democratic majorities is you're going to continue to see increased regulation, increased pressure on fees, increased tendency, of course, to spend money and to misprioritize really what the community wants, infrastructure, transportation, public safety, economic development, housing and neighborhood development. And yes, focusing on the environment.
So you're saying
Republicans
that
can't be dismissive of soft tissue issues in the urban areas. And that's really candidly where we just have not been very receptive to it. We've tended to push things out to the national scale when we really needed to look inward and say, not that affordable housing is not the issue. The issue is how do we address it as a conservative? And yes. I think that's where we bring people to us because we realize that we are not going to solve this problem that's occurring right now called enormous prosperity and population growth by just saying we can just somehow magically bring rents down from 1,400. We cannot do that. What we can do is we can say, hey, how can we bring lower cost housing, workforce housing into this community and do it smartly?
And when you think, I'm sitting over here frantically nodding my head. That is exactly it. It's not about compromising our principles, limited government, lower taxes. So how do we apply those things to preferences like affordable housing? And when you look at the track record, my Democrat friends and colleagues have worked very hard on this, But we're not a whole lot better off now than we were 10 years ago. We have an over 20,000 unit affordable housing crisis. And our main solution was to throw additional $50 million on the ballot. But right now we're doing the same thing. We're spending $25,000 per unit to solve it. Why don't we try and show some of the independents and Democrats out there how conservative principles apply to this, where we're not necessarily giving the approach of a government entitlement, but we care about it, we're compassionate about it, and we find programs like A Way Home, who spends on average $10,000 per unit to groups focused on near homeless and homeless, and they have an over 70% success rate to get them to a sustainable
But do you care about it? That's the question I have.
Yes.
And I think a lot of listeners may have, because these are problems that you're suddenly concerned about because you lost. These are problems that the Democrats have been talking about for years, and you've been talking about other things, and suddenly these are important. So do you really
care? No, because I think that it's important to say here, and this is another angle I got a lot of backlash on, of people who were offended that, why do you think we don't care about that as Republicans? I think a vast majority of them do, but there's the voting Republicans who are just out there paying attention. There are the ones who are in local government and elected office who are doing the work. Matthew cares immensely about the environment. And I think he actually takes some flack for that, right, sometimes. People don't know that because we talk about national and state politics all the time. And in top 20 cities, going back to what was said here, it's time for us to start focusing locally and saying, no one's coming in to save us. It's up to us to figure out which scenario is it going to be. Are we going to learn a lesson as a party? Or are we going to try to sit around and wait, like some folks like Don Reed have asked for the, everyone in town to say, oh, you know, it's too bad we gave the keys to the car over to all Democrats. Well, I'm not willing to wait around to see if our city implodes or not, and then they'll come running back to me. I want to get to the bottom of it in my party locally here now.
So tell me what Republicans locally stand for. What's a Republican? What are you all about?
A set of principles.
What are they?
Limited government, lower taxes, freedom, family, belief in the individual, rule of law, and transparency and ethics in governing.
Really?
That's what I stand for. I think we will all debate smaller points.
Transparency and ethics in government and the rule of law. Now, when you apply that to the national scene, how can you be for that?
It's not how you can be for it when you apply. I mean, that's the basis of the entire country. Which one? Rule of law? Rule of law is right now you either come on board to say, I am going to either run to change the law because they're not right, or I'm going to run into position to implement based on law. We are a group of people that don't say we're going to run out there and start legislating on our own via our actions.
But
we're going to do the best we can.
But if voters went to the voting booth in November and said, I'm not voting, as somebody told you, Matthew, I'm not voting for you because you're a Republican, and I'm not voting for any Republicans because I can't stand them, or because I disagree with the president, or I disagree with how the Congress is dealing with the president and the potential scandals involved there. If that's the case, how can you be a Republican locally who stands for transparency, ethics, and rule of law?
I think it's. I don't know that there's a correlation. I mean that I or any Republican has to change how they act based upon what's going on at the national level.
Being painted with the same broad brush.
And that's unfortunate. And the best thing I can do is to broadcast my message, for the party to broadcast the message a little louder, and try to, in the future, to try change some of those folks who probably, a lot of them, a lot of them did vote for me in the past because I've won re-election a couple of times. So how do we get those folks back to the conservative fold and voting for Republicans and splitting the ticket going forward rather than just voting straight D? I don't think that we have to change our principles based on anything that's going on at the national level. We, as when we're in office at a Republican, I mean, look, I was probably the strongest advocate for our parks and our greenways. I worked with homelessness issue, including getting an increase in our budget to address homelessness and the warming centers that will be opening up during this winter. There are a number of issues that I talked about and that I helped address in the county commission. That are local issues. But the problem is that those don't get the support from, I'm going to put it out there, it doesn't get the same support from the party as if I posted an article from Fox News about something on the national level.
Bingo.
I post something about Fox News or the Second Amendment on my Facebook post, and I get 150 likes and I get 200 comments in 12 hours. I post about something that about a greenway opening or how I got some improvements to Midwood Park or how I was the one that was able to get Stewart Creek Greenway moved up in the CIP on the west side of the county. I post something like that on Facebook. I get about 10 likes, maybe one share, and 75% of those people are Democrats and unaffiliates that I know are Greenway supporters.
Exactly. So
Where are the Republicans saying that those are important issues?
You're coming back to what, Mike, you keep asking. I mean, what we're talking about is how do we get a seat back at the table? And I always look at anyone as a Democrat or unaffiliated or completely agnostic about politics and say, where do we differ on local issues? And this is where, guys, it's ultimately a persuasion argument as to, hey, we're talking about hardware. This is roads, trash, airport. Building a clean, safe city. I mean, we're talking about issues where these are kitchen table conversations.
But
that
you drive 2 hours up the road, and it's about bathrooms. It's about voter ID.
Well, let's remember, it was about bathrooms here in Charlotte. It originated in Charlotte. You know that. It was obviously played well across the state, but it originated in Charlotte. So, I mean, obviously, but again, that was not an issue that was birthed from the Republican Party and the idea of two minority individuals on the city council who decided that we all of a sudden have an issue over whether a man can go into a women's restroom or not.
So I have a minute left. When you talk about all politics being local, and Matthew, that's what you're talking about, all politics is ultimately local, and it's actually the local politicians who really impact people's lives more than the people at the national or the presidential level, because you're doing the dirt and the roads and the sewers and the water, etc. But you're being drowned out by the national conversation. How can you compete with that?
You got to build a trench line. You got to build a trench line between those issues. Again, you've had national parties on the Democratic side when Bill Clinton was in office. Obviously, Democrats were backing off from him as he was going through his scandals. It's not the first time that someone at the top of the ticket's going to do something to harm you.
Democrats backed off. Republicans haven't.
We get a group of people in a top 20 city like this to align and circle around a set of principles, and we come on shows like this not to convince people to be Republicans that are Democrat, but to convince them, hey, balance is good, and here's a set of principles. Yes. Do you agree with us?
Okay. Oh, we'll come back to those principles when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with three Republicans talking about the fate of the Republican Party, at least locally, and what they have to do to regain seats, given what happened in the November election. We're here with Edwin Peacock, former Charlotte City Councilman and a mayoral candidate twice, Matthew Ridenour, former County Commissioner, and Tariq Bakari. I said your name wrong the first time.
No, it's okay, Meek.
Thank you.
It's totally
Tariq
fine.
Tariq Bakari, City Councilman and a Republican on council. Before we continue our conversation, let me share with you some comments that have come in from people while they're listening. Peter on Facebook, do you think the movement away from Republicans is due to the party's move toward Trumpism?
In this last election, yes. I mean, this was a reprimand against the party on a local level. That's why we saw anything that was urban across the country. You saw it in other urban centers as well, too. You essentially were a part of a Trump lash, and that is going to play itself out again in 2020 if he's our nominee, which I fully believe he will be. He will be here in this city as well, too, so the amplification could be pretty high.
There's an impact, but I would say no. And I look at Michael Bitzer and others' analysis on since 2004 on the bluing of top 20 cities like Charlotte. And, I mean, Trump wasn't around in 2004. When this trend really amplified to now, I think it obviously created an uptick in what we've seen, but it's coming. And Matthew's numbers show 7 to 10 years; mine show 5 or 5 to 6, even more aggressively. It's
are you worried
it's a
about
trend.
Are you worried about re-election?
Personally,
yeah.
Obviously not. If I wrote that op-ed,
Okay. Scott emails. I've lived in Charlotte for 25 years. I'm a registered independent and voted for at least one Republican every election until the last two. Do you truly believe the GOP is sticking to core philosophies with their actions? Seems they simply pick and choose the reach of government depending on the issue.
Well, I think at the end of the day, maybe we haven't delivered the right type of candidate for him. And this is one of the big issues that I have with our party is that we have to get back onto recruiting high-quality individuals, and it needs to be a diverse ticket. I'm really proud that in the two times that I ran for mayor that I was involved in helping to get a friend of mine, Vanessa Fora, a Latino, and then also Pablo Caraval to get on the ticket as well, too. We haven't had a Latino who's served since Dan Ramirez on the county commission, and we have to be able to represent the entire the entire metropolitan area.
What about that reach question? Because Republicans believe in small government, lower taxes, individual freedoms. But at the same time, they want to legislate what happens in your bedroom. No, I'm serious.
Not at the local level.
Hey, here's, and you said something earlier.
Or in your bathroom.
I think this is the point there, right? Which is, how can you be for rule of law and transparency, but what's going on? I think the shift, the major shift here for us is we need to be measured on principles over people or party at the end of the day. It's our principles. These are conservative principles. And
but do you live them? Do you live up to them? Does the party live up to them?
And that is the question. And the answer is no, not all the time, but at least we have a set of them. So what we need to do locally, which a lot of us strive to do, is always stick within them. I worked my butt off on the budget, right? And it was a great budget, but I couldn't get a budget passed without a tax increase, so I had to vote against it. So I had to stick with my principles in something that was very tough, that I got a lot of concessions for my district, for the police officers, for so many other things. But that, so that's what it's about. That's what the principles are about. And do we always, are we always perfect to them? No. But that's what we should strive to. And for the candidates who are not striving, that's where we measure them. Not if they like affordable housing and think that's important. Well, how did they deploy the principles in attacking those problems? That's what makes us unique.
How do you apply the principles to the issues? And because there's always going to be an issue. These are local dioceses where you are a reactive body. We don't have an enormous amount of time to deliberate when there's situations that the city council has faced in the last 4 years and that the county's facing the headwinds, obviously. The biggest thing that we've got coming up, Mike, and this is where we're going to be able to see a contrast.
Evaluation.
Reevaluation. I mean, we look at what the Democratic majority did in the last election, and Matt knows this all too well. They are going to be on the hot seat for this, and we're getting ready to watch a lot of gymnastics around the way that they play with the money. And the way that they, if we're going to lower the tax rate, are we going to go revenue neutral?
And guess
neutral?
What that hurts? Affordable housing.
Yes, it's
guess
sure.
Guess the things it actually
it's
hurts.
Is it connected?
There's a lot of connection there,
so
Mike.
Let's back up, because some people don't follow this as closely as you guys. They're going to revalue. We just did a program on this. They're going to, every 8 years by law, the county has to go through and revalue your property. If you own an apartment building or you own a single family home, they revalue it. And then it goes to the lawmakers, to the county commission and to the city council. And they decide what the per $100 value tax rate will be. And they have historically tried to keep it revenue neutral, although not all the time. And what that means to you is that even though your property value goes up, your tax bill doesn't go up by as much as it would if they just let it sail upward. And you're saying that now, since the county commission is completely controlled by Democrats now,
yes.
On the hot seat for what happens when they get to have to make the decision on tax valuation and the percentage of what of that valuation that you paid in taxes. Are you giving them a warning shot over the bow?
I'm giving a warning to all listeners. Watch your back pocket. I mean, this is going to be a situation where our city is prospering and we're growing, and we've got the ability to do a reval. Hopefully, we will do it effective from Cornelius to Mint Hill to Myers Park. That didn't happen last time. Now I'm saying is that you've got Democrats who have an enormous set of priorities where they want to spend money first and then ask questions later. The difference between a Republican and a Democrat on the local level, I think, is there are really strong critical questions that come about, obviously, incentive grants that we pay or that we will for companies to come here. Secondly, we talked about this, MLS soccer, Matthew. We've got the Panther Stadium that is still very much a subject that's in play. And this is the ultimate difference between where I think voters on all sides are going to say, is it right that we are spending money at $87 million for a group of billionaires at our last concession on the city council so that we could get upgraded skyboxes and a bigger TV screen. Meanwhile, we're 50th out of 50th in economic mobility. I mean, it's the rich stealing from the poor.
Are you saying we shouldn't? Because Republicans generally like incentives for businesses.
Well, that's not an incentive for business. That's an incentive for billionaires.
It's about a deal. If you look at the deal we just did with Honeywell, right? I hate the fact that states compete against one another with taxpayer dollars, but it's the way the game is played. And had we not participated, we wouldn't have made the announcement we did last week. So I look at the deal just like we do in business, which is we gave $17 million to get $19 million back to get the jobs, all the, and that's direct hard factors in the pro forma, not to mention the 5-to-1 jobs that get created in addition to that, the $7.9 billion in GDP, state growth, and all of those things. And oh, by the way, if they don't produce the investment, the jobs, and pay that $19 million in taxes, they don't get the $17 million. That to me is an ironclad deal that I'll vote for 10 times out of 10. That is why Republicans are good to have at the table in these things.
So, well, let's go back to the affordable housing piece of this tax revaluation, yeah, because that's something that's important to a lot of people, obviously. We just voted in $50 million, is that right? Mm-hmm. $50 million in affordable housing bonds. If you raise the property value, and there you also raise the taxes commensurate with that property value, that makes housing less affordable, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
That's,
I mean,
correct,
we're looking at commercial valuations expected to rise north of 70% in compared to 2011 valuation. Right. We're looking at our homes values being on average almost 40% over where they were in 2011. I know you had Ken Joyner on a couple of weeks ago, and so I'm sure your listeners got a solid education on the reval, but when you look at numbers going up that high, then absolutely there is a trickle-down effect to the affordability of housing. I can't tell you how many times over the last 6 years I've been serving in office that I've heard someone say, I rent an apartment, I don't pay taxes. Yes, you absolutely pay taxes. Your landlord is not paying those taxes on your behalf out of the goodness of his or her heart. It is being passed down to you in the form of a higher rent, exactly.
Yeah.
So when we're looking at these valuations going up as substantially as they're expected to, if the commission does not lower the tax rate itself substantially, then people are going to get hit in their pocketbooks with a 15, 20, 30% tax increase.
And the city has the tax rate.
Yes.
There are two Republicans, two watchdogs on city council. Are you going to, what's your approach to that?
And I don't want to, here's another thing we need to do. We need not make it a team sport where the other guys are the bad guys.
Yes.
Right? You know, so I'm not saying that they don't care about these things as well. I'm saying that we, as a group of people who have bonded together as a party, right, this is the thing that we've said, this is what we're championing. So I don't want to take away from them. I have a bipartisan podcast with my good friend Larkin Eggleston where we talk about things every night. We need to not be so combative and not be so what they're doing is bad and start talking about what we're doing. And what we're talking about doing is if we had had more Republicans, a majority of Republicans over the last year, I bet you we would have spent as much or more time on affordable housing as it relates to reducing regulation and red tape that incents the free market to do what we want than all the time we actually spent on getting a $50 million bond and artificially influencing the free market.
But does that happen? Because a lot of times on the national level, Republicans talk about removing regulation so that businesses can grow and that will all trickle down to the employees. It hasn't happened. They removed a lot of regulations for businesses and they did that tax cut, the majority of which went to rich people and businesses, and saying,
I mean, the economy's doing pretty damn good, Mike.
What don't you like about our economy?
Not if you can't afford a house.
Well, yeah,
We live in a city that's growing. We're the second fastest city in the country. Well, do you want prosperity or do you want the city to go the other direction?
You didn't let me finish my comment. Which was, it doesn't seem to trickle down. They use that money for stock buybacks and compensation for executives, et cetera.
Let me explain how it trickles down locally. When we remove the regulatory burden around giving more density or height or whatever they want in a building that they're going to provide 30% AMI housing units and they're going to put that in a deed restriction, guess what happens? They have to produce that. It's trickle down because literally we're giving the developer something they want in order to build something we know our community needs, and it just happens. I mean, we're not talking about national level trickle down macroeconomics. We're talking about deal making locally to solve very specific problems. And that is where our principles honestly work best.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. And it's to your point on the affordable housing, if a builder says, as I've heard, say, if I just had a dedicated person at the county, for this apartment building project, somebody who would push through my permits, plan review on the city side. I'd have my electrical inspection the day after I request it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You push these things through me, I will add X number of affordable housing units because then I can afford to do so.
So we have 90 seconds left. Let me share some more things that have come in over the transom, and maybe their minds have been changed because of the conversation that has ensued since they sent these in. Andrea, on Facebook, Republicans need to start actually caring about people. Maybe that opinion has changed because of this conversation. Greg on Twitter, our democracy would be healthier with a functioning second party. This will require repudiating the ideas that brought us Trump and working on something that can work for all Americans. You can jump in there if you want. Hayes on Facebook, Republicans' messaging is easy. Lower taxes and no. Democrats actually want to govern and help. And Brandon emails, I'm a 34-year-old who doesn't watch John Oliver or Saturday Night Live for news. You do a disservice to your party by assuming the issue is not indeed their platform.
That one listener who said something about lower taxes and no is, I hear you, and you are absolutely correct. Republicans are known for saying no, 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 and not wanting to engage on some of these local issues. I had someone the other day over Thanksgiving say, we're never invited to have a seat at the table. Well, we're not invited to have a seat at the table on these conversations of importance because we don't talk about them already. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we need to talk about those.
We're out of time, but I just wanted to ask you one question. Are you optimistic about the future of Republicanism?
I will start and I will say yes, because I'm sitting here with these two individuals, and I honestly couldn't have been more pumped up with every single word that came out of their mouth. I believe there is a future for us in top 20 cities.
Ed. This is going to be the dawn of a new age. I am really excited about the direction we can go from here, because failure is going to be a great teacher for us.
Okay, Matthew?
I'm absolutely pumped for the future of the Republican Party and the future of the United States.
Matthew Ridenour, Edwin Peacock, Tariq Bakari, thank you all for joining us. Appreciate it. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.